Do you sleep through the night?
Do you wake up refreshed, energized to greet the day? Or would you like to? Did you know that preparation for a good night's sleep actually starts early in the day? Join us for our series on sleep and brain health.
Hi, I'm Dr. Shabnam Das Kaur. I'm a functional medicine doctor and a certified tiny habits coach. I teach people how to improve their focus, get rid of brain fog, and reduce the risk of dementia down the line.
And I'm Andrea Spiros. I'm a professional speaker and Tiny Habits certified coach, and I work with organizations to harness the power of high-powered habits to increase engagement, resilience, and well-being. Today, we're going to talk about the four functions of sleep and how to even know if you're getting a good night's sleep. So first and foremost, the first function of sleep is it supports our three foundations of brain health: optimal blood glucose level, optimal blood pressure, and lower levels of chronic inflammation. If you haven't listened to that podcast, we'll put the link in the show notes. Those are the things that we really want you to understand as supporting better brain health overall. For the remaining three functions of sleep, Shabnam, tell us about those.
Okay, so one of the most important functions of sleep is brain detoxification. So this is detoxification in the sense of throughout the day, the brain is busy taking care of everything we do, starting from movements and thinking and, language and all the different. So interesting thing is everything we do is decided by the brain. So throughout the day, the brain doesn't have time to take care of itself. And at night, and this is again fairly new information, at night what happens, the brain has what is called the glymphatic system. So this is glymphatic. Now you must have heard of about the lymphatic system, but the glymphatic system is in the brain. And what it basically does is takes away all the toxins that have accumulated throughout the day. And that is when the brain detoxifies essentially.
So basically, it's like if the three foundations of brain health were the foundations of your beautiful new home, the brain detoxification function is like taking out all the trash at night. So all of the trash that you've accumulated during the day, it's not overflowing. It's not weeks and weeks and days of trash every night in your beautiful home. The trash gets taken out. And that is one of the primary functions of sleep, is to do that for your brain, so you're not overloaded with trash in your brain.
Yeah. The second very important, and again, these are not in orders of importance or anything, but another very important function of sleep is what we say memory consolidation. So basically, memories are being made throughout the day. They have to go into long-term storage for us to be able to retrieve them down the line. So that is memory consolidation. And memory, as you know, it's high, very important for everyone. And I'm sure, Andrea, you have noticed it, and our listeners would notice it as well. If you don't get a good night's sleep, you know that the next day your brain's not functioning as well. So, Andrea, I love your analogy of when I talk about memory consolidation. I love how you explain it.
Well, and I like to continue the kind of house metaphor here, in that, first of all, you have the supports for your house and all those basic things. Then you take care of your house by taking out your trash. And then memory consolidation is like putting everything where it belongs, organizing your house so that your fork, you know where to find your fork, you know where to find your important papers, and everything's not all around stacking a mile high. And that's what sleep is for memory consolidation. And that's why it's so important. And you can see in that situation, if you can't lay your hands on things quickly, if you can't come up with that, what you were going to say, that word, it can be very frustrating. Or when your brain is full of brain fog and you can't recall, what you even had for lunch or what day it is, that hinders your performance. So sleep definitely helps with memory consolidation. And what's the final function of sleep?
So another very important function is emotional regulation. So basically, lot of mental health challenges have been related to poor sleep. And there was a time when we thought that, you know, rather scientists thought that poor sleep was a symptom of mental health challenges. So every mental health challenge, whether you talk about depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, all of them have, you know, sleep disturbances as one of the symptoms, even dementia. But recent studies have also shown us that it is possible that poor sleep could be causative. So emotional dysregulation, meaning sometimes it may not be a mental health challenge. It may be simple things like road rage. You know, you don't sleep well and you know, someone cuts you off and you're like, oh, I'm going to kill that fellow. So those things are all very important. And one more important factor is when it comes to emotional regulation, dreaming has a big role in that. So that is very interesting.
That's fascinating to me. And in our analogy here, there's not a super clean analogy for emotional regulation, but I think we can all relate to being just a little more crabby or a little less tolerant. And when you take out the emotion, take out the trash of your emotions, when you can consolidate those and clear them through sleep, then you're clean for whatever challenges come your way during the day. And I think we can all relate to that as human beings. Let's talk about how we know when we're getting a good night's sleep. I mean, presumably, if you're listening to this, you may have some sleep issues or you're at least curious to know. And if you're waking up, if you're waking up tired, if you're waking up crabby, if you're wanting to stay in bed, we can safely say that there's some sleep issue going on. But what should we be looking at in terms of how we assess our sleep, like the levers that we should pull? I think there's three of them: duration, quality of sleep, regularity. And then in this, we want to talk about wearables. So let's start with duration, Shabnam.
Okay. So we have, we almost every day you open some page on the internet or whatever. Back in the days, we used to say you open the newspaper.
The very olden days.
So you will read something about, you know, how poor sleep is killing you, like short sleep duration related to cognitive decline, related to poor mood, related to worsening blood glucose levels, worsening blood pressure. Your blood pressure rises. More importantly, it completely impacts your metabolism and how it can, you know, make you gain weight and also have challenge losing body weight. So we know a lot about poor sleep duration. So what would be the ideal sleep duration? Now, here is where, you know, sometimes you'll find people saying, when you're older, you don't need as much sleep. Well, studies have not quite shown that. So a young adult, and I'm going to post the link to the Sleep Foundation's table so that, you know, you can look at it if you want to. Young adults need about 7 to 9 hours, and older adults, so that is 65 or more, they need about 7 to 8 hours, and teenagers need 14 to 17 hours. And
anybody who's had a teenager knows that.
Sorry, 8 to 10 hours. I got the number wrong. So teenagers need 8 to 10 hours. Now, Andrea, I know your boys are, one is a teenager, another one was a teenager fairly recently. Do you feel that they get enough time to sleep?
Well, I have to say yes, because as a parent, I have always been pro sleep. And I have shared with them the importance of sleep to their mental health and well-being, to how they function in the world. And so they got in on the sleep train early. Even my younger one, he would regulate himself when he was in early grade school. He would, you know, he was welcome to stay up a little bit later, but a certain time came around on the clock and he would say, I have to go to bed. Like, he just was very in tune with, and it still is, they're both very in tune with how sleep affects them. My older one will even, has fine-tuned enough to know they get weepy when they are overtired. And this is as an adult now,
oh,
right?
Wow.
They recognize they feel sad or weepy about some issue, and they recognize that it's not quite the appropriate response, and they recognize that it's because they haven't had a, they need to go to sleep, basically is what happened. And so, but that's been over years of kind of looking at sleep and that pattern. So I'm unusual. My kids are unusual, but what I see in a lot of other parents is that no, their teenagers do not get that amount of sleep. They may get some cat naps in the afternoon after school and then stay up late, but they're really not getting the sleep that they need.
Yeah, and another thing that, you know, it concerns all of us is the increase in mental health challenges among younger people. So one of course, that is not the only factor, but one of the factors is, you know, shorter sleep duration. In fact, several years ago, they did a study where they said that what if school started later? You know, so school starting later, meaning kids get a little bit more time to sleep. And I forget the exact details, but when they started school, I think it was just 1 hour later. And I'm not sure whether they checked to see whether the kids were really getting that extra hour of sleep.
Probably not. Probably not.
But Andrea, the interesting thing is it increased their academic performance.
I remember that. And I think it was specific to, well, at least what I remember was that the younger kids, maybe kindergarten or, you know, five to 11, that they go to school earlier, and then the what we would call middle school or high school or upperclassmen, so like maybe 11 to 18, that they go to school later and it improved their academic performance, because younger kids tend to get up earlier and the older kids tend to get up, or, you know, a little bit later. And that was fascinating to me.
Yeah, it was like just change of school time. Like, this is huge. I mean, in terms of public health, it's got a huge impact. Anyway, going back to how will you know whether you're getting good sleep? One is duration that I talked about. Another aspect in terms of duration that I want to mention is we hear a lot about short sleep duration, but one more factor is if you are habitually sleeping for longer than 9 hours, so 9 to 11 hours, this is habitually, not like you're catching up on sleep over the weekend or something like that. If you're habitually sleeping for longer than 9 hours, that is also a red flag for mood disorders, for dementia. So that is something important to remember as well. If you find that a loved one or, you know, someone you know very well is sleeping much longer than usual, then that is something that needs to be looked into. Next factor in terms of sleep is quality. So what is sleep quality? So Andrea, you and I have talked so much about sleep before as well, that quality essentially means if I wake up in the morning and I feel that I'm rested. So that is one question I ask my patients. Do you feel rested when you wake up in the morning? And if you have never tried, you know, asking yourself that question, that is something I'd highly recommend you do. Because so often, you know, we live life like a caterpillar, like just go on and on and on without really thinking what's going on.
Yeah, that's a great analogy, where we just kind of inch along, we go and go and go, and we don't really question what's going on.
Yeah, so first, most importantly, ask yourself when you wake up. And you know, if you have gone through sleep challenges, you would know the next
day. Yes, yeah.
I know how my brain feels. It feels foggy. It feels terrible. And, you know, it's like, oh, I'm not at my best today. But of course, most of us, you know, we have the ability to kind of battle down that day. And, you know, like, oh, I'm a high performer, as I know, Andrea, you are. And with very little sleep, sometimes I'm sure you have gone through important stuff the next day, but
exactly, High performers will power through, but that doesn't decrease the validity of this question. And it doesn't mean you couldn't achieve even more of what you want to do if you actually felt rested when you woke up, you know. And even if you think you're sleeping well, ask yourself that question, because you may need to fine tune.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the third important factor about, you know, to find out whether you're getting good sleep is, do you have regular bedtimes and regular wake-up times? So it's not like, you know, okay, throughout the week you are overly scheduled, you have, you know, you don't give yourself enough time to sleep, and you're going to catch up on your sleep over the weekend. Our bodies didn't get that memo that, you know, weekends and weekdays are different.
That's right. Nor are they likely to get the memo.
No. So this goes to the circadian rhythm. So circadian rhythm is basically your biological body's biological clock. And the master clock is in the brain. Of course, it doesn't look like a clock.
That's right.
But that's the one that decides so many things in our bodies. It decides, you know, how we metabolize food. It decides hormone secretions. It decides immune system problems. So everything is decided. So that master clock in the brain is connected to all the other clocks and all the other cells in the body. And sleep is related to how the master clock functions. So when you wake up in the morning, one of the first things that should happen is you have daylight falling on your eyes. So that is one of the cues to the master clock in the brain that, you know, it's time for you to wake up and start the day. The other cues are temperature changes and food intake. So these are the major cues to the circadian clock, the big clock in the brain. And that is the master clock that controls everything else. So obviously, if you, you know, tonight you sleep at midnight, tomorrow it's like 2 a.m., then that completely disrupts the circadian rhythm. And disruption of circadian rhythm actually is related to every disease we can think of. And of course, brain conditions like dementia are one of the first things, in fact, in many people with dementia that happens is their clock gets disrupted. So very important to, you know, honor that big clock in the brain.
Exactly, exactly. And let's talk a little bit while we're on this topic and before we wrap about wearables, because I think so many people are into the wearables, whether it's an Apple Watch or a Fitbit or any Oura Ring, any of those, and they tend to think that that is the be-all and end-all. And when maybe it's just part of a bigger picture. So talk a little bit about wearables.
Very interesting, Andrea, because I know you use a wearable. I have been using one for a while. So my point is, if you use a wearable, number one thing is, do you go over your data to see how you're doing? Because just using a wearable and, you know, just using it to answer phone calls, that is not going to change.
So you have to take action. You're talking about, we have to take action on our wearables.
Oh, yeah. And obviously the first step before taking action is to look at your data to see what is happening. So while, you know, as you said, Andrea, there's so many people who use wearables. And I always ask people, I said, what insight did you get from that? Some people will say, I realized that if I have my dinner very late in the evening, I don't get very deep sleep, or, you know, I'm restless. Alcohol is another one that I had. In fact, this was many years ago when I started looking at wearables after a patient of mine told me, you know, doctor, I don't like when my resting heart rate goes up. And I found out that if I drink, you know, 3 glasses of wine instead of 1 glass, my resting heart rate goes up. And I found that from wearing this wearable. And I thought, oh my goodness, this is like information that I would never have thought of before. So obviously you need to go through your information to see. Like one of the things that I found out when I went through some of my data was that my daily step count. So this is again my hypothesis, and you can figure out whether it applies to you. What I found is I have a sweet spot for the number of daily steps, and mine is around 8,000 to 9,000 steps a day. For some people, younger people, it can be even less. But the thing is, there is likely a number. And you can look at your own data and see. And I have shown it to my patients as well. I said, did you realize that you got better sleep on this day and your number of steps that day was like 8,000 instead of 6,000, which is kind of more your average? And it's like sometimes, oh my, as if like a cloud has just, you know, gone away. Oh, that is one thing I can look at differently.
Right. And so the wearables are really beneficial when you can link them to what you're doing and draw the conclusions of what's going on for you. Because for you, Shabnam, 8,000 to 9,000 steps, you found a pattern that you got deeper sleep. For your other client, they saw that above their 6,000 level, they got deeper sleep. And the other client with alcohol realized that there was a correlation between the amount of alcohol they had and their resting heart rate. And how they felt. And so if you're wearing a wearable or using any type of wearable, then you want to make sure you're linking it to what you're doing and you're changing your actions based on that, because it's going to be unique to you. Also, I'll just say you don't want to necessarily, you need to have a good quality wearable that gives you good information and not overly rely on it. I will say I have a particular wearable. It has a multifunction, so it's not the reason I purchased it. I don't think the information is great on it. And so as a consequence, I don't look to it as deeply as if I had a wearable that I could trust. So just know that you want to, you know, if you feel great and something's going on in your wearable that says it's off, find another way to look at it to make sure that the information's correct. So any last thoughts on wearables?
Yes. One more important thing I want to, you know, a lot of people don't use wearables, and I don't want you to feel pressured to use one because, you know, everyone, your husband's been telling you or your kids have been telling you. No, you decide. So a wearable is not, I won't say that it is, you need to buy one. There are no shoulds in the world, in the time of habits world. So don't feel pressured. If you want to buy one, definitely. Another thought about, you know, the wearable data. So Andrea, my wearable will tell me that, you know, my sleep quality in relation to women my age. Now, I know women my age are not getting good sleep. So
like a rock star. Because we know that you know everything about getting a good night's sleep, right? So that may or may not be valuable to look at it that way.
Yeah. So it's like, so what does it mean? And like another friend of mine says, it shows me, it compares my data to the average. I don't want to be average.
Yeah. Exactly. And so I think that's really important too. Don't feel pressured to wear a wearable. You can know how you feel, whether your brain feels clear, focused, you feel optimistic, you feel like you have energy to make it through the day, you're not having a slump in the middle or end of the day. You'll know without a wearable. So basically, maximum number one of behavior design is to help people do what they already want to do. So help yourself do what you already want to do, and help your maximum number two is help yourself feel successful. So if you feel successful wearing a wearable, if wearables are going to help you feel successful, then wear it. If it's not going to help you feel successful, then forget it. So with that, next episodes, we'll talk about sleep problems and sleep solutions and even sleep stealers. So thank you for listening. Share, rate, and review if it feels good to you. Check out the show notes in the details. And if you don't see them, you can go to drkarmd.com/podcast. That's drkarmd.com/podcast. Cheers, everyone.
Thank you, Andrea. Thank you, everybody. Bye now.